North Shore Today on MSONewsSports.com is brought to you in part by the Sylvan Street Grill and the Bradford Tavern, a great place to stop by while you're out on your holiday shopping this month. This is North Shore Today. It's Friday. The weekend is just about here. Hi, everyone. With Rick Moore, I'm Bill Newell. And Rick, it is the weekend coming up, and it is the Super Bowl weekend in North Shore High School sports. But as far as the North Shore concerned, not all that well represented, not in our immediate area. Got a team like Reading going to a Super Bowl. But I guess we can focus on some of the news coming up. We have Greg Verga on the program today. Maybe just give us a preview on that conversation with Greg Verga that's coming up.
Well, Greg is an outgoing city councilor at large and had an unsuccessful run for mayor.
You know,
keep an eye on politics for us, I think, Bill, for a while, and check in maybe once or twice a month locally, and hopefully a little bit wider scope as well, maybe covering the state house if possible. But anyway, he's got some concerns. He's still on the city council, and he's got some concerns about several things that have been ongoing in Gloucester, and among them are that Fuller School property that was valued up around $20 million not that long ago. And, you know, the city has put that property up for sale. It's up at the top of the Blackburn Circle. It's up in that area. And they put it up for sale, and they got a request for proposal last week. They got one, and it's for $5 million. So they're mulling that over. I mean, 5 out of 20, not so good. And then something – oh, the he's got some concerns about how things are going between Gloucester and Essex Tech with respect to students and enrollment and all that kind of stuff and other things. So he'll I talked with him yesterday, and he had some interesting points to make, and it's a pretty involved, detailed discussion.
All right, that sounds good. Another political front, the Daily Item is reporting today on Governor Baker's visit to Lynn yesterday. Apparently he was in town. He visited the Lynn Tech School and had a tour there. Also spoke at the Lynn Chamber of Commerce, or I guess it was the Lynn Chamber of Commerce. There it was announced, or somehow or other it's come out, that he likes peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. So there you go. And I don't know if he didn't mention Fluff, and Lynn is the home of Fluff, as you know. So, so I'm with him on that. I like the peanut butter and jelly. Not a big fan of the peanut butter and Fluff sandwich, but Fluff by itself is all right. There's nothing wrong with Fluff. And then also there's one other uplifting story, I suppose, in the sense that Lynn's Raw Arts, I have a group of girls there that have started a project where they're going to be selling some of their own artwork, which is made out of things that have been, I guess, discarded in the past. So there's quite a lot of artists do that kind of thing, so it's kind of interesting, and it's always very creative. And having said all that, the breaking news story out of Lynn today, however, is very much more tragic than that, and that is a house fire, a two-family house, which is on Bruce Place, which is a street that is near Chestnut Street and near Essex, so near the intersection of Chestnut and Essex, kind of up above Chestnut to the east of Essex, but in that little block there, in that area, rather, geographically, and a kind of tragic story. And watching the news this morning, I think it's Chief Barry from the fire department speaking about how when they got on the scene they had to make a decision about whether to put the flames out or try to rescue people. And well, they made the decision to try to rescue people, but they couldn't get everybody. They did rescue a couple of people out of the building, and I guess it was a very emotional scene, as you might expect. So a very tragic event in Lynn as they kind of clean up and try to get on that scene. And so a very tragic day in the city in that regard.
Well, I know that people all over the North Shore are praying for families that they don't even know in that situation, and I'm among them. It's it's horrible, but I do know that the power of prayer helps with healing. But there's nothing you can say or do when something like that happens.
And another topic that we have discussed, Rick, a number of times is the shootings out in California, and now it's become very clear, I think, that this was not simple workplace violence. That when you have your home, more or less a ammunition dump for or depot rather, I guess, for all kinds of different ammunitions. And the guy's wife was, now they're saying that she might have been the one that kind of radicalized this guy, who was born in the United States. And they did travel to overseas, but that they might have even had bigger plans, you know, on their plate on that day. Even after, there's still kind of a bizarre and uncertain as to why they went after the target that they did. But that in itself still is a very sad situation. And again, everything that I hear about that story is still the remarkable police. And we talked about this yesterday, Rick. The remarkable police response in that incident, and how fast and the quality of work that they did immediately after, you know, getting those calls.
And I think it is going to make the general public a lot more diligent in what they see and do and people they deal with. And I don't know that it's going to change the culture. I mean, that's the intent, I would think, of terrorism, is to make everybody paranoid. But I do think that it is, that incident in particular is one that is absolutely startling when you consider a young couple with a six-month-old child committed, and a mother especially, committed to killing people and really inviting suicide. So this is a whole, you know, brand new added wrinkle.
Yeah, it is. Well, we can also talk about sports in a few moments, but Rick, maybe just we were over at Beverly High School. We have a post up there on our program that we did from Beverly High School yesterday, as we talked to as many fall coaches as possible yesterday at winter coaches as possible, as we transitioned between fall and winter. This is that time, Rick. It's an obvious mistake that I could make, in the sense that it is meteorological winter starting as of December 1st, but seasonally, we're still in the fall, right, until December 21st. I think that's when the seasons change, right? Am I wrong on that?
No. It's,
right.
21st in that vicinity, up at the solstice.
Yeah, so. Yep. However I'm confused, I'm just rationalizing it, I guess, right?
Well, that was fun yesterday. I really enjoyed that. And it was so cool to see all the coaches. The activity that was going on in that gym when we first got there, Bill, was amazing. I think every square inch of that floor was being used, plus the balcony and the weight rooms, and it was tremendous. But the enthusiasm of the kids and the coaches and the work that they put in, and you know, just learning about each of the coaches, that was just great. So I appreciate being able to do that.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody thinks about a facility, a space being used, that was a space that was being used. That large Henry Cabot Lodge Fieldhouse, as big as it is, and of course if you're from Beverly or around the North Shore, many of you have been in that facility for a basketball game or something or other. And that, as Rick mentioned, they're running the track, which goes around the perimeter. They've got the middle of the floor divided into three different areas, basketball and then track, two track teams on each side. So there's all kinds of things going on, and that was just freshman basketball. And then later on, they bring in the boys team, and then later on the girls team that night. So, so there's definitely a lot going on. It did quiet down after a little while after the track teams left, but a very busy and almost dangerous situation for us with these guys running by. But anyways, it's a lot of great energy over there, and you know, I'm sure that's duplicated at all the North Shore schools like that. It's just good to see that kind of participation. Oh, I just want to add one more thing, Rick. On our down below on our website, we have we're continuing our Christmas holiday music tributes or entertainment vignettes, if we can, from YouTube, and we have a couple of them here. We've played some stuff from Saturday Night Live so far this month. In this post today, we're going way back. We're going back to the early days of television, and we have two posts. One of them is the Perry Como, "It's Beginning to Look a Lot Like Christmas." That's a classic, and from his old TV show. And then the other post is Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra with that classic holiday favorite, "It's a Marshmallow World." So we're putting you in the Wayback Machine if you want to go watch those. I guess one's in black and white. The Como one is in black and white. And Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra, they're in color, living color, on the TV sets from, I'm not sure exactly when that was, but I'm guessing early 60s, something like that. Anyways, so that's what we got further on down on our post today. So what we're going to do is bring in Greg Verga as he talks with Rick Moore, and we'll continue along on this Friday on North Shore Today.
With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore, and I'm joined once again by Gloucester City Councilor Greg Verga. And Greg, welcome back. We're in December. It's the holiday season. Spirits are high, and I say that with tongue in cheek after all the nasty stuff that's been going on. However, it is toward the end of your first city council run as and I mean as a participant. You're going to take some time off, probably not voluntarily, but nevertheless, taking some time off so we can look back on things, reflect on things, and I think it might free me up to ask you some questions that I might not ordinarily ask, but we'll see how that works out.
Sure.
In the meantime, let's look at city council. I don't know where you are, but maybe you could look back on either we could look back on the year perhaps later, but maybe bring us up to speed as to what's, if anything, is going on with city council in Gloucester.
Sure. Well, one thing I could sort of throw out there as a starting point is I put forward a council order with Melissa Cox to look into the possibility of banning plastic bags, sort of like they did in Manchester. My wife, she's been on my case about it for months. If you just look around, you'll see, you know, floating in trees or on the side of road plastic bags, and they're not going anywhere. It's like, you know, what, 1,000 years before they start to break down. So there are alternatives. Let's look at them. If it's doable, hopefully the next council will do it. I won't be there. And if it's not, if it's too much of a burden, mm-hmm. and it's a legitimate burden, then we don't do it.
When you mentioned plastic, it's funny. I was going around the back shore last Sunday, as my wife and I do after church every weekend, and we saw people on the side of the road about 10 o'clock in the morning over on the back shore. And you know, we said, what are they looking at? And we looked out there, and we saw the whale.
Oh, yeah.
It was a majestic sight. It was beautiful. Yeah. I thought it might have been a minke whale. It didn't look very big. But then Martin DeMarco had those shots later on in the week that it's a right whale. And it was tremendous, and it was playing, and you could see the stuff coming out of the blowhole,
right.
You know. And so it wasn't, you could tell it wasn't in any danger or anything. It was fine. But it's funny that you mentioned the plastic bags, because I thought immediately, boy, you know what, if these whales are in too close, you don't want them to get caught up with the lobster traps and stuff like that. And this thing was in, I estimated 50 yards offshore, and I guess it was 75.
Right.
So it was pretty close, I mean, right next to the rocks. But I worry about, I like whales.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to go on a whale watch, because I think I don't want to disturb them. So it was great to see this whale come in. But, you know, I did think about the I don't think the little plastic six-pack containers could probably hurt whales, but you do wonder about that kind of thing. And so the environment, especially with the meeting in Paris this past week or weekend, I guess it's continuing for 2 weeks, among the world leaders about climate change and so on. So, you know, it is good to think about the environmental impact of stuff locally.
Right. Well, I mean, on the whale, the footage that Marty posted, I mean, yeah, you could see whale shoreline, you know, in one frame.
Incredible.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, so obviously a right whale's not going to get entangled in a plastic six-pack thing. But you know how they feed. I mean, they just open their mouth and all that
everything
junk.
Goes in, yeah.
Right. And those
true.
Plastic bags, you know, it's one thing that when we think about, like the, not to put on my Greenpeace hat here, but the, you know, like when you have face wash and it's got the scrubbing bubbles in it, those are basically little bits of plastic. And so they're saying that when you put that goes down your drain, they're not dissolving. So you basically have millions and millions of little tiny particles of plastic that fish are eating and digesting, and we are eating the fish.
Well, that will bring me to a topic I didn't want to talk about today, or hadn't even thought about, was the secondary sewer treatment plant that's now 5 or 6 years in our rearview mirror, that the feds came here, had a big meeting, and said, okay, you guys are going to need one. Never get back to us. Don't know about waivers. No information on that, so we'll talk about that in a future date, I presume.
Yeah, I think right now that's probably been a don't ask, don't tell thing for
I'm sure, which is going to come back to bite us. I know it is.
Yeah, I mean, because the obvious question is, if the order comes down, do it. So forget about the money issue. You know, if that's going to be another thing. Where are we going to come up with $50 million? Would we be able to build it where the plant is now? Because I assume today we wouldn't be able to build a plant there on marshland.
Well, I understand there's going to be some property available at Blackburn Circle where the Fuller School used to be.
Yeah, so if we can put in a $1 bid. That's a good segue into the Fuller topic. So did you have a concern about that?
Funny you should ask. I'm almost apoplectic. I've been against this whole let the Fuller School rot thing, as you know, for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And due to I don't know, courtesy, I guess, I haven't really let my feelings vent. But I was against it, and as an educator who actually worked in that building back in when it was the Fuller School ninth grade, we had a ninth grade there. I was there for 1 year. It was just easily the nicest building I've ever worked in, period,
right.
Far and away. Not even mentioning the auditorium and the cafeteria and the gym, which is just off the chart, tremendous.
Right.
But the classrooms, the openness, the light, the functionality of everything, it was tremendous. So I loved it. And I've seen the Cape Ann Symphony there many times, been to events there in the cafeteria and so on. So when this thing was allowed to rot, and I'm going to use that term in a very negative sense, it upset me. It bothered me because with minimal maintenance, I think we could have avoided some things. Now, the question I have, and this is where it's easy for me to talk from the sidelines. However, as a taxpayer, I'm looking at what the Gloucester Times had in the paper recently, and I'm going to assume it's accurate. Ray and Sean do a great job. Ray Lamont and Sean Horton, they do a terrific job over there. Apparently, the property that is up for sale or up for bid or up for RFP, whatever it might be, and you can clarify that for me, was originally valued at $19 million plus. Now, I'm guessing that's when Fuller was in good shape because it includes the building.
Mm-hmm.
Then it was revalued recently, relatively recently, at $15 million, and there has been one bid for $5
million, mm-hmm.
which is 20% of that original, a little more than 20%, but about 20% of the original value of that property. So it's a valuable piece of land. Where do we go from here? What does City Council do, and so on?
Right. Well, this has been a very interesting saga for the last 6 years or so, and I'm on record here. You know, people could search your archives, and we've talked probably hours about this. And I was one of very few councilors. I think there were probably, counted myself, 3 to 4 others who would chime in now and again about Fuller. And actually, there were 3 of us who chimed in regularly about the condition and what the heck's going on over there. You recall there was one time I wanted to get the second opinion, and
right,
the former
right.
mayor...
They wouldn't let you in the building.
They wouldn't let me in the building. And so where we are today, where are we today? It's out to bid. The bids have been closed. The bids are back. Bid is back. We have one bid. And my suspicion is that... my fear is that people have wanted to accommodate the YMCA, which is a great organization.
From day one.
No question mm-hmm. that the Y is a great organization.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I hope that this administration and the next council, because I'm going to have very little to say about it in the next 3 weeks, I hope that they really take a step back and say, are we doing what's right for the city while we're helping out the YMCA? Because if you look at what's been put forward, the Y is a very small part of the project. And the rest of it is housing, 170 units.
Right.
You recall I was the one who put forward an amendment to restrict, to prohibit housing as part of the bid. And I got shot down immediately. Because I know what happened for a 25-year fight next door when they proposed housing. First it was fair market, and then we got 40B shoved down our throat. And now what I'm really concerned about is, well, what happened to the hotel and the assisted living? They seem to have disappeared
mm-hmm.
because now it's retail space. Mm-hmm. So in order to accommodate the Y, which is basically the goodwill of the Y is what the two for-profit partners are looking to capitalize on, we're going to go with 170 housing units. For every housing unit, let's just say they're condos. I don't know what they're going to be. They're going to be condos, rentals, or what. But I'm assuming that they'll eventually be condos. Let's just say it's $5,000 of taxes generated for each unit. Well, one kid from each unit going to school gobbles up that $5,000.
Is that going to build us a new school, interestingly enough?
Funny, we'll tear down a school to make way for... So I'm not picking on the kids. I'm a realtor, I'm a real estate broker, professional, and I don't think we necessarily have a housing crunch right now that would be solved by this project. If it were affordable housing, maybe, because people could, quote, afford to buy them. If you put fair market houses there, we're not going to have 170 Gloucester families suddenly move there.
Right.
You know, so that's my fear, is that $5,000 of taxes for a unit, one kid goes to school, and it costs $10,000. It's in what they will take from a city in services will be much more than what we get in tax revenue.
I see so many more strands to this thing. The logic just baffles me, and maybe just because I'm ignorant. However, the interesting another article in Times is that school enrollment is on the way up. It's on the increase and will continue to increase in Gloucester. Now, we've got a school being built in West Parish, a part of the city, $32 million. I don't know how much the city has to pay. But I'm guessing before too long that school is going to be too small for the neighborhood, especially if we get new housing, new people come in, and so on. I understand it's on the other part of town, but still, you can bus,
well, kids in Lanesville are coming from the bowling alley area. So
okay.
Yeah.
So the logic just, where is the foresight? Now, that brings me to another very perhaps leading question. Maybe you don't want to answer it. I don't know. But back when the former mayor decided to let the building rot, could the city council, was it in the city council's power to override that and say, no, we need to continue at least minimal maintenance on that thing to keep it alive?
I think on the surface, the short answer is no, it was an administrative decision because they control the DPW, which controls the buildings. I think if there were more of a push from the city council, instead of basically two or three of us being told to sit down and shut up, you know, maybe we would have got somewhere. But I'm amazed that, you know, some councilors who were supportive of what was going on, then all of a sudden were against what was going on, then all of a sudden they're supporting what's going on. You know, I just hope people will look closely at who is representing them and hope they will represent the city, what's in the best interest of the city as a whole. That's all I said from day one. Whatever happened to Fuller, I just wanted to be a fair, open process that was in the best interest of the city. But looking at this now, it's like, okay, well, the Y is such a small part. Why didn't we just spin off 3 acres and say, hey, Y, you want to buy this? And that would have taken care of a lot of the issue, because it's funny now some of the comments from the administration you saw after the bids, where some of the people who didn't turn in their bids after they requested the packet said they would have been interested in the smaller parcels, whereas that's one thing I was trying to push for. So,
wow.
You know, I guess I don't want to say I told you so, but told you so.
Yeah. Well, again, you know, my thing is because I'm an egomaniac, I guess, and very arrogant, is that, geez, I just picture that as a... we used to have what was called a central grammar school in the city a long, long time ago, back in the late 1800s and early 1900s, and I envisioned Fuller School as another modern 21st century central grammar that could house, you know, K to 5 or K to 6 or whatever, with some upkeep and renewal and some investment. But
that's exactly shows that I still to this day do not agree it's a teardown, you know, because central grammar was junk when the city sold
it. No, it's true.
And now it's still standing. Yeah. Was it 40 years later? I don't know the last time the city used it. But there was an opportunity for that building to be used for other stuff. I think the horse has left the barn. I don't think the city is going to utilize it. And just the cards have been stacked against that possibility anyway. But somebody might want the building. And I recall when we were putting this out to bid, I said, you know, we've been told by our people in-house that it would cost $1 million to tear down and dispose of the Fuller's building itself. And I says, that's going to come off the price. And I was told by the administration that that will not happen. Well, $5.1 million tells me it happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, compared to $19 million value. So is this ball rolling? I mean, is this a done deal because it's $5 million and people are going to say, hey, $5 million is better than nothing?
Well,
and,
I mean,
you know, we got I-4C, too. That's nothing.
I have to say, I can't speak for the administration. I don't know what I was encouraged by them being discouraged, at least by what they were quoted by in the paper about. So it sounds like there's still an opportunity for something to happen. We're supposed to have an executive session with them after our meeting on Tuesday. As far as I know, we can ask questions and you know, give some input.
What's on Tuesday?
We have a city council meeting for the CPA grant applications, but I've requested that we also have this executive session, which we were promised by the mayor when the bid went out, to talk about it. Because obviously we can't do it in public, talk about it.
Who's the executive session with?
It would be the mayor and the administration and the city council.
I see, okay.
So, needless to say, there's no power of the council right now. It's just, if we're able to get into a room and talk and have some of our input heard, you know, that's great, but there's nothing that obligates the administration to listen to any of us. And I'm not saying they won't, but I'm just saying that officially on paper, they don't have to.
I'm just astounded by this whole deal. I really am. I'm just astounded by it. And you know, we've talked about it over the years, Greg, right here on this little program. Okay, well, that brings me to another interesting article in the Gloucester Times recently, and I think it was Ray LaMonta wrote this one also, about a $2.5 million over expenditure on the API at Andrew Bridge in the last, what, 7 years? We've had one lane in that bridge for great portions of each year for the last 7 years. And now they're saying that the Department of Transportation, I love the way it's phrased, could have saved $2.5 million, which to me means that, okay, they wasted $2.5 million. But and he said, okay, management is responsible. Okay, what does that mean? Who's management? Are they going to pay it back?
Yeah,
to the taxpayers, to the state.
Well, it's kind of interesting because a lot of times the inspector general is asked to write reports, and you know he or she puts out a smoking gun report, and you know sometimes nothing happens. I mean, the inspector general's doing the job, but I don't know if there's any teeth. Well, as we found out from the charter school, the Inspector General's report on the charter school was pretty scathing, but didn't have any, you know, didn't impact the Board of Ed to change their mind.
Mm-hmm.
But we got screwed somewhere. This has been our big dig, you know.
Yeah. And it's 7 years.
Yeah, it's been a jobs program, if you ask me. I mean, to someone who has to drive in to the island, you know, every day, I've seen it a lot more than others. But we see fraud and waste, and it's kind of disgusting. And the sad thing is, it makes people assume all government is like that. You know?
But, you know, immediately comes to mind is this Essex Tech deal.
I was about to say, and we've got this deal at Essex Tech.
You know, let's build a private facility, but we don't want to pay you any money. Okay, fine, just let us use, maybe an hour or two a rink for the year. Well, sure, let's do it.
Yeah.
And the legislature says this shall be done.
Right. I don't get it. I mean, as I've said here before, I wasn't able to comment, but since my time on the council is winding down.
Oh, this is fun.
If I had a vote, I would have voted against joining Essex Tech. I would have says, thank you, we've enjoyed our last 40 years, whatever it was, that we were members of the North Shore Vocational School System. But I do not think we're getting out of it what we're putting into it. You know, it's a very select group that gets to go there, you know. For the kids, there he says, oh, it's for the kids. We're going to give these opportunities. Well, how many Gloucester kids get to go versus how much we pay? You know, we're paying to build a school on somebody else's property. And then as we find out, you know, there were years and years with very little oversight. I mean, Melissa Texera, when she first got in the committee, she's now the chair of the Essex Tech. She was telling me they would get the budget and it would be like a two-page summary.
Mm.
And she was one of the first people to start questioning that. I mean, here we get a 3-inch binder,
right, right.
You know, with every line item.
Well, I talked with Salem Mayor Driscoll this week, and she and the PBD Mayor Ted Betancourt, the Beverly Mayor Mike Cahill are questioning this and pushing it forward, and she actually had a meeting with Superintendent Lentini, I think is his name.
He's the interim.
Yeah. And he, according to Mayor Driscoll, he is really looking into this stuff big time because he's new on the block, and he's opening up closets everywhere and overturning rocks, which is really good. So I think there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and maybe this can be righted. And I saw something online today, but I didn't have time to read it about the new buyer, not buyer, but the new facilities people who are going to take advantage of the property agreed to pay some rent or something or other. So I think there's beginning to be an, if not an investigation, at least maybe a correction that can make this thing get better. Because as you say, no one wants to stomp on kids, but good grief. You know, there's got to be some kind of equity here.
Yeah, I mean, it's so you got the two issues. In a perfect world, let me rephrase that. If things were running perfectly without, I don't want to say fraud, but without questionable things happening, I'm still not sure Gloucester's getting a bang for the buck, you know, for the amount of however many dozen kids get to go to North Shore Tech versus how many other kids don't get in because they don't meet the criteria. There's just not enough seats. And then I think it impacts negatively our vocational school. So even if everything was going great, I'm not quite sure it's the best deal. But the fact that it's not going great and there's a lot of shenanigans and a lot of waste and fraud and in very little light of day until recently, and I think a lot of it is thanks to Melissa, you know, it really makes me question our commitment up there.
And that's expected. They have a whole city-wide, for one school, administration. They have a superintendent of schools, an assistant superintendent, and secretaries, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's crazy. I don't know how big the school is. You know how many kids are in the school?
I know that, what is it, like, he said every year, so this would be talking a class, they get like 1,600 applicants, and I think only 700 get in. So if you say 700 per grade level.
Is it three grades or four grades?
It's four.
It's a big school then.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, my.
But still, I mean,
they should have a good football team.
Well, you recall me? Maybe I'd mentioned it here. I went to a Focus on Education breakfast at Gorton's year or two ago, and everybody made their presentation, and obviously the former superintendent of North Shore Tech got up and talked about their Taj Mahal. And then after, he mentioned his presentation, 1,600 applicants, only 700 kids. So I says, what do you do with the other 900 kids, if my math is right, who don't get in? Do you send them a letter saying, sorry, you didn't get in, but by the way, Gloucester and Peabody and Salem have class? He says, no, we don't do that.
Yeah.
So they were supposed to be doing it. I was told the letters were not on how effective it was. But we should be in a partnership. We shouldn't be competing. We should be in a partnership. It's like, okay, North Shore Tech with an annex at Gloucester. So if there's 50 seats for electrical shop there and we have, 30 seats here, that's 80 total. So that's how it should be done.
Okay. So in summary, everything is fixable. The Fuller School land in Gloucester, which was originally worth $19 million, there's a $5 million bid. That doesn't mean it's going to happen that way. That could be better. It could be fixed. The $2.5 million overexpenditure on API at Andrew Bridge, at least it's on somebody's mind now. At least it's out there in the public, and that could be fixed. Maybe that'll get better. And Essex Tech, I think there's a real movement to try to make it a lot better than it has been. So there is some good things I think that could happen. Any other good news, Greg, that you can think of as we are in the holiday season? The Tarr family got the Christmas tree up and it's lit down by the waterfront in Gloucester. So good time of year. And sadly for us skiers, the weather sucks because it's very warm, which saves money on your heating bills.
I was just about to say we have no snow, and I know that's not happy news for you.
No.
But then again, we had a great December last year, very mild, then all of a sudden, all hell broke loose. So
As I'm talking here, I'm trying not to be negative because I'm upset, obviously. And then Rush Limbaugh immediately comes to mind. Now, this guy is super popular. He's on every single day. And he is the most negative person I've ever listened to, but he's super popular. So maybe we should be more negative more often. I don't know.
Well, it's kind of funny because I will not give this guy credit by mentioning his name, but I posted on Facebook today about this ban the bag thing. Just a simple thing saying, I propose this, let's see if it works for us, get involved. And this guy who I looked him up, allegedly is a radio personality, has no connection to Gloucester, posted on there saying, what, we should get rid of a brokers, meaning me, a real estate broker, who cut out the middleman who has nothing to do but add to the cost and doesn't help society. So,
This is funny. For someone who supports capitalism, presumably.
Yeah, right. So it's like, I don't understand the this right-wing anger. I have no problem with Republicans.
Some of them are probably friends of yours.
Some of them are friends of mine, as I found out from my Democratic friends. They didn't like that. The extreme anger that's on right-wing radio is
it's unbelievable. Is. I was encouraged by two things. Something O'Reilly said the other night, which was really great. And I don't remember what it was, but that was encouraging to me. And also, and I've said many times, I like to be in the middle. I'm to the right on some things, especially when it comes to the flag and things like that. My dad was an Iwo Jima survivor, and I did my time in the Army, so I'm to the right on some things, and I'm to the left on other things. And I do know that wherever you are on the spectrum, you can certainly love being an American and wanting to make what's best for our country and our citizens. But the rhetoric, again, from far left, far right, the only difference is on the far right they have guns. The far left doesn't. So, there's a difference there.
Yeah.
But I watched Paul Ryan on 60 Minutes a couple of weeks ago.
I didn't see it.
And he is the new Speaker of the House, and I know that he was on the extreme right at one time. And it really looks like he's working his way toward the middle. He said some very, very good things, and he did say, it's time to stop what you just said. Just because you're a Republican, I'm going to say no. Just because you're a Democrat, I'm going to say no to whatever it is. We got to stop that.
Right.
And so he did mention that, paraphrasing obviously, but he did mention that, and that gives me some hope. Now, if he can convince others in his party to do that, and there are others on the other side who can do that. I mean, Seth Moulton is becoming more and more visible by the day,
right?
Which is really interesting.
I saw him on CNN recently. Yeah.
Yeah, really interesting. Then maybe things can get a lot better. And I by no means do I think we're down the tubes or that we're in the toilet. I think this is a who was it the other day? Democracy is the worst. Democracy is the worst kind of government or something like that, but it's better than all the others.
Right.
So I agree with that. And I don't think it's the worst kind of government, but it certainly is better than all the others.
Well, speaking of Iwo Jima, did you see The Man in the High Castle on Amazon TV? Did you read the book, The Man in the High Castle?
No.
A Philip Dick book from the 60s about if the, from the premise that the Nazis and
this
the Japanese
science fiction,
won the war.
Yep.
And so anyway, there's a series on Amazon. That That does, it veers off from what the book was, but it was really a great book, great series.
All right. Yeah, I've run into several former Marines in this past week, and that's what brought that to mind. And I always have to mention my dad because, you know, Iwo Jima is, it's an icon in the history of the Marines, as many things are. And the main thing that my dad always talked about with Marines, and I'll end it with this, is that teamwork. He always talked about teamwork, teamwork, teamwork.
Right.
And so let's go Patriots.
Yeah. Well, my uncle ends all of his email he was 37 years in the Marines, with being a Marine isn't everything, it's the only thing.
Yeah. And Lombardi used that, right? Winning isn't everything, it's the only thing?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, that's Greg Verga. Greg, I want to have you back now as a political commentator from time to time, if you would like to do that.
And, yeah, sure.
We'll talk all kinds of things. Is that okay with you? And whatever
right.
you want to bring up. And I know you're going to keep your eye perhaps from a distance, but you will keep your eye on City Council type stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
I'll be back, as they say.
I'll be back. All right. All right, that's Greg Verga, Gloucester City Councilor, for another few weeks or so. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore.
The Lynn Auditorium has some great shows coming to the North Shore soon. Treat yourself to an evening out in a comfortable premier entertainment venue. Upcoming shows include Melissa Etheridge, Friday, January 15th. The following night, Saturday the 16th, Get the Lead Out, the Led Zeppelin tribute band. Then Chicago arrives Friday, February 5th. Johnny Mathis on his 60th anniversary concert tour comes Friday, April 8th. For more shows, more information, visit LynnAuditorium.com or call 781-599-SHOW or contact Ticketmaster.
Fact is, including the commute, people spend 10 hours a day at work. No wonder they're forced to buy car insurance in 15 minutes. They just don't have time to go meet with someone. Well, Columbia Insurance has an alternative. The insurance professionals at Columbia Insurance Agency will meet with you at your workplace. Even better, we'll go to the registry and bring your plates back to you at work, free of charge. At Columbia Insurance Agency, we come to you, and we really do. Visit ColumbiaInsuranceAgency.net and set up an appointment today. That's ColumbiaInsuranceAgency.net.
The Porthole Restaurant is a North Shore dining tradition. Enjoy waterfront dining in a casual atmosphere. The Porthole features outstanding quality, quantity, and price. Known for a full variety of menu selections, you must try the award-winning clam chowder, fresh off the boat seafood, lobsters, prime rib, steaks and chops, daily luncheon and dinner specials. They feature spacious and well-appointed function rooms. The Porthole, a great value, a great dining experience. Open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week on the water on the Linway in Lynn.
Since 1897, the Lynn Museum has celebrated the history of one of America's most consequential cities. Recently merged with Lynn Arts, we are working to build a dynamic cultural hub where our past comes to life and new art is created. Now on display, Present Tense, a Lynn Arts exhibit, open through December 19th, showcasing the contemporary work of our Lynn Arts community. The Lynn Museum is located at 590 Washington Street and open Wednesday and Friday 12 to 4, Thursday 12 to 7, Saturday 10 to 3. Find us online at lynnmuseum.org.
Team up with The Daily Item at itemlive.com, your community information connection. The Daily Item features colorful, timely stories highlighting the North Shore. The new look page focuses on people, places, and things. The Item is presenting news in a user-friendly format. Don't miss any local news or reading features on your neighbors. Check out The Item today. It's all new every day. For home delivery, call 781-593-7700 or go to itemlive.com.
Welcome back to North Shore Today. I'm Bill Newell along with Rick Moore. And Rick, a lot of events happening here on the North Shore this weekend. Holiday events. I know there's holiday fairs in a lot of different communities. And what else do you have over there?
Well, the same thing. The Gloucester Times has a listing for the weekend for Magnolia. It says Lexington Lights Up Magnolia Holiday Magic. I have no idea what that means. All will be bright Sunday as Lexington Lights kicks Magnolia's holiday season off. So I have no idea what that means. But there's all kinds of stuff going on. We've got stuff posted. And, I'm sure in every single community on the North Shore, there's some kind of holiday happening for every single age group, probably all weekend long.
I got one for you. Chief Fred Mitchell of the Georgetown Fire Department, they announced their Toys for Tots for Santa program. Firefighters and Santa will be collecting new and unwrapped toys for children from infant to age 16 all along their route. So if, let's see. So that's going to be Sunday, this Sunday, beginning at 11 on North Street at the Byfield Town Line and ending just before 7 p.m. at the fire station on Central Street. So keep an ear and an eye out for the Georgetown Fire Department. They'll be bringing Santa through the town and traveling over 60 miles for this cause. So the I guess they have a the thing I'm reading, you can click on the entire schedule, but I'm sure if you're in Georgetown, you can probably locate that somewhere. But there you go. So there's a lot of different things happening. I just thought of something too, Rick. Now I'm forgetting. But go ahead.
Oh no, that's it. I tell you, this is it's been a busy week. We've got Trending Now with Josh Arnold coming up at 10 o'clock. He's got four guests lined up, and the only one that I am familiar with at the moment is Heather Atwood, who will have, you know, the usual look at holiday and other recipes. Again, she's an author. I'm going to see if I can get the link to her book so that if you're interested in buying her books, we can get that. And she's a ball of energy, fun to listen to. But he's also got three other guests, and that's between 10 and 11 this morning.
Gotcha. All right. And that's all coming up today. And again, don't forget to check back on some of our other posts, and we'll keep you posted on things here on MSONewsSports.com. With Rick Moore, I'm Bill Newell. Thanks for being with us on North Shore today, and have a great weekend.